This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Baseball is in full swing. NBA playoffs are heating up, and your NFL team is gearing up for training camp. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's 5 at 5
with Mully and Hall,
where we debate the top 5 sports stories of the day and then open it up to you, the Chicago sports fan. Call us at 312-644-6767, or you can tweet your thoughts at Mully Hall. 5 at 5 with Mully and Hall starts now.
One of the darker moments in Scottie Pippen's career was displayed in The Last Dance on Sunday night. Word is Pippen is displeased by the portrayal of him, leading Dennis Rodman to say Scottie was so underrated and so underpaid. He should be holding his head up higher than Michael Jordan in this documentary. Do you agree with Rodman? Why or why not?
Well, I think Scottie Pippen has a complicated history. I think Scottie Pippen was an absolutely unbelievable talent, a great player, and I don't know that you get your 6 championships, your 2 three-peats, if Scottie Pippen isn't a huge part of it, and he was a huge part of it. But it's complicated. It is. There are incidents within it that are just difficult to not consider. It's just an amazing story from where he came from school at Central Arkansas, to winding up in the NBA, to being the, you know, generational talent that he was. But his career is always going to be overshadowed by being in Michael's shadow. And that led to different issues. I mean, he was no question he was way underpaid. No question that he is underappreciated, and certainly that he's underrated as a talent, because he was extraordinary. Now, you know, that year where he led that team without Michael, he was sensational that year. He was really got that team a lot of wins and did a lot of things. But it's just so hard to overlook that 1.8 seconds. And there were several times where his pride, or, you know, his feelings of injustice led him to do things that are utterly unacceptable. I mean, you know, when you hear guys, like, he quit on the team. He quit. You know, Bill Cartwright, that is a true story. He broke down in tears over the whole thing. You know, it's just unbelievable that all the different twists and turns. I feel bad for Pippen that all this stuff is portrayed. I wouldn't say that he should be displeased about the portrayal. I think he should be displeased about some of his actions. But it doesn't change the fact that the guy was an unbelievable talent, and you don't get to where you are at, and you don't get to where you're the vision of that team without Scottie Pippen on it. So I'm going to agree that he was underpaid for sure. I'm going to agree that he was underrated. But I think that sometimes, you know, some of these little elements, it's just hard not to view them outside the context of when they happen, because that's just, there are a couple of unacceptable things that he did.
Underpaid without question, and I think we have talked about that and the contract and the reasons behind the contract. Underrated, I'm not sure, because he still goes down as one of the 50 best players in NBA history and one of the best sidekicks, if you want to call him that, ever. And that is the way that he will always be known. That's part of his legacy. I think he's fortunate, more than anything, in terms of the way that we remember him. And I know that sounds kind of crazy. But I looked at last night and I watched Steve Kerr talking about he quit on us. And you talked about John. You saw John Paxson and all the players talking about how remarkable it was to see the star of that team, the center of that team that had taken them so far at that moment. And then he decided, because the play was not designed for him, and it worked. It worked. But he quit and he sat at 1.8, and it's difficult to ever outgrow that or outlive that. And yet he has. He's not defined by that, because they did win three more championships. He was a big part of that, the second most important player on the great dynasty teams. And I think that 1.8 seconds is a stain on his reputation forever, but it didn't define him. And I think that he should feel fortunate that it hasn't, because you know what? He doesn't regret it. And that to me was as remarkable as anything last night, was that after all that we saw and after cringing again and reliving those 1.8 seconds, Scottie Pippen is asked about it and he says, "I probably wouldn't change it." Are you kidding me? Are you kidding me? So that kind of took away any sympathy that I might have felt for Scottie Pippen being unfairly maligned here all these years later, because you can at least show a little bit of remorse, regret, second-guessing yourself, and he didn't. So I couldn't believe that part of it, and yet he meant it. You know that he probably doesn't, and he was being as honest as he could be, so I give my guest credit for that, but my goodness sakes.
Yeah, a little bit shocking maybe to hear that he would do it all over again. I'd do the same thing if I could do it again. I would not. That was shocking for sure. But I agree with Dennis Rodman here. I mean, obviously he was extremely underpaid, and one of the reasons the Bulls were able to build such a good team and keep such a good team together and continue to add is because they had Scottie on that really, really team-friendly, we'll say, team-friendly contract. So he was certainly underpaid, I think probably underrated at that time. I think now we look back and we can see how great Scottie really was. So I think now he's not so much underrated. But I think before then, absolutely. And then you kind of saw the first year after Michael retired, the way that Pippen carried that team throughout the regular season. You know, MVP candidate, kind of became the guy and stepped up in that role very admirably. You know, how he's being portrayed, he's displeased by it. I mean, look, man, they interviewed you. They're showing things that happened in history. You know, these are all real events that transpired. So if you're unhappy with the way you're being portrayed, then maybe you should be a little bit more regretful of how you handled certain situations. So, Scottie, listen, I love him to death. Great player, legend for sure. But, you know, not being a little bit more remorseful of quitting on his team in that scenario, I think leaves a little bit of a stain on his legacy. Tiny stain.
I mean, I totally agree that Pippen was underrated. You know, you can't dispute the fact that he was underpaid. No doubt about that. But, you know, you can't sit there and tell the people, you know, the producers of this film that you don't regret sitting out that play in that that 94 game in the playoffs, and then not be happy with it, with the way you're portrayed. I mean, your own words are on display, Scottie Pippen. So I mean, you can't have it both ways. You can't be unhappy with the way you're portrayed when it's coming out of your own mouth, man. You don't regret sitting out in that final play because you weren't getting the ball and it was being given to Tony Kukoc. I mean, that I don't agree with, that Pippen should be holding his head up higher than Michael Jordan. No, because there are a couple of instances where you could say Scottie Pippen was a selfish teammate. And you know, there was the instance that was portrayed yesterday. There was when he decided not to screw up his summer and get surgery before that final Last Dance season. So, I mean, if you don't have any regrets, then you have to own it, Scottie Pippen. You can't be unhappy with the way you're being portrayed if you don't show any remorse.
Right. You know, David mentioned it, the doubling down of I do it all over again. Come on. I mean, imagine if they had lost that game. Like, the 1.8 locally is bad enough. Like, and I think that's what the biggest issue is that locally, if you were around at that time, you knew about it. It might be news to people who weren't alive at that time. And nationally, I think you only think of Scottie Pippen as is Jordan's sidekick for six NBA championships. The other thing, though, that I have to disagree with the group, you know, he was underpaid. He might have been underpaid at the time, but I think the Bulls did him two solids down the line. There's something there when he went from Houston to Portland that the Bulls were involved in that kicked in some unbelievable escalator to his contract. And then he was brought back to the Bulls later at the end for another he made over $100 million on the court. So the guy was not underpaid. I mean, I can't get on board with that he was underpaid. But these were both spectacular episodes. And I can't I don't want to rush the calendar, but I can't wait for next Sunday. I got to be honest.
That is an unbelievably great question.
In a conference call with all 30 Major League Baseball teams Monday, Commissioner Rob Manfred expects to propose a 78-game season starting July 4th, including 12 games each against divisional opponents and six apiece versus teams in the geographic division of the opposite league. How do you think the MLB Players Association will respond, and is this feasible?
Well, I think it sounds feasible to us, and I think that there's such an appetite for a proposal that makes sense and that sounds like it can be done within the context and the confines of the calendar, and it would crown a champion. I think we are all ready for some baseball, and I think it feels like, you know, there's this anticipation that is palpable, and there's a lot of hope in the air, and I think that is what it is. It's optimism. Here's what I fear. I fear that the Major League Baseball Players Association, after today, the owners get their take and they get their kind of conference call to hear what Rob Manfred has in mind, and all the people that have gone in, you know, put their heads together to try to arrive at this sort of proposal. I don't think the players are going to probably like it tomorrow. I fear that as part of the story, because I think there's going to be some legitimate concerns and questions that probably don't have answers to them yet about safety. I'm not sure that they are going to be able to adequately address all the concerns that will emerge about testing, tracing, and treatment, and things that we have to know, the players will want to know before they feel comfortable coming forward. There's going to be, to some degree, some risk involved, that and some risks they're going to probably be asked to take. Some will be willing to, and others won't. And I think that is where this story is probably headed, I fear. The other part is going to be about compensation, the prorated aspect versus a 50-50 split, and all these things, billionaires fighting with millionaires, that will make us roll our eyes and say, don't you really want baseball? How badly do you miss it? And I think that is the part of the story that I dread this week, but I think it's inevitable. And I just don't think there's going to be a carte blanche, rubber stamp reaction to this proposal, as badly as we all want and to some degree need to see baseball.
You know, I fear that there's going to be labor issue over this, David. And I fear it because, oh my God, if baseball can't come together and if this thing is waylaid, if they have a plan, but the players want to talk about the money of it, and I get it. You know, the owners, they've got money. They've got future earnings. The players have their careers, which are limited, and no one knows how long the career will last. So you don't want to lose money. And I get the arguments on each side. It's just I don't think people want to hear a word of it. And I think that labor strife in a pandemic, a global pandemic, when everybody's kind of hanging around desperate for some kind of entertainment, and it's important for baseball to give that to us, I think that it's, if it comes down to the money aspect of it, if they can't reach some sort of economic agreement, I think people are going to turn on baseball and be turned off by baseball at a rate that we've not seen before. So I'm hopeful that they can get through this, because if they don't, oh my God. And I don't know, can you lock yourself in a virtual meeting room? Can you just keep it on for a couple of days? Oh, you know, Rob, what? Shut the door when you're in the bathroom. Like, just how do you do that where you just kind of lock it down and argue it out and you come away with a solution? But that's the worst part of the whole thing, quite frankly. I mean, we're sitting here, we're talking about different plans and all that stuff, but if it comes down to some money argument, I think that's going to really be upsetting to people. And I think there are a lot of issues. I think there's a lot of things to work through. And I think that the players, if you're concerned about your safety, I think those are legitimate issues. And I think there's got to be questions asked. But my fear is that this thing could come down to an argument, as you say, David, the billionaires and the millionaires, and the viewing public will not be pleased if that's the case.
Well, July 4th is about 2 months away, so optimistically, you know, this could be feasible, hopefully in 2 months. You know, we're doing better than we are now, but, you know, there's already a lot of, what's the opposite of momentum? There's a lot of bad momentum, we'll say, from the Players Association, and they're already kind of...
Resistance?
Yeah, resistance. We'll go with that. Thank you. It's very early. It doesn't seem like the Players Association and the owners are on great terms right now. And the owners are pushing for this more than the Players Association is pushing for this for a number of reasons. You know, they have television contracts. They want to cash in on all that revenue that they feel that they are owed, while the players themselves are like, all right, we see it, but pardon me. The players are the ones that actually have to go out there and, you know, really put themselves in danger. And it was Andrew Miller, former Cleveland Indian, now current Cardinal, who basically came out with a statement over the weekend saying, we're younger and healthier, but that doesn't mean our staff is. That doesn't mean the umpires are going to be in the clear. It's not hard to get one degree of separation away from players who have kids who may have conditions, other family members like that, that live with them. So you can't just say, oh, these guys are young, they're professional athletes, they're healthy, because the point that Miller brings up there, it's not just the players themselves, it's everybody in their orbit. It's family members, it's umpires, it's staff, it's everybody. So hopefully, like I said, in 2 months, we're a lot farther down the line than we are now, but I have a feeling there's going to be a lot of resistance. Yes, David, thank you for that. A lot of resistance from the Players Association.
And Miller's on the committee, isn't he, Kevin?
Yes, he is on the executive board of the MLBPA.
There are a lot of reasons I think the MLB Players Association will respond by saying this doesn't work for us. And, you know, part of it is, Mully, what you brought up about the money here. I mean, the players already agreed to prorated salaries in March. They don't want to take any more of a cut. I think the pay is going to be an issue here, and the health concerns. I mean, the bottom line is, you know, it's just not going to be, no one's going to feel safe at this time until you start seeing the cases of COVID-19 decline steadily. I don't think anyone's truly going to feel safe. I think the players that are concerned about being away from their families or possibly spreading coronavirus to family members, those worries are still going to remain. I just think there are too many things. Maybe I'm wrong. Maybe Kevin's optimism is just and correct. And
you know me, the optimistic one
that's
on the
right,
show.
Always. Maybe by July, everything will be looking much better. And I hope that's the case. But as we sit right now on May 11th, I don't see it happening.
Well, based on the question, I think the players are fine with what's laid out in the question. But again, at the end of the day, it all goes back to money, 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 money. And we talked about that they renegotiated in March and they got to a point. And there's quotes all over the internet. You know, there's going to be war if the owners seek to further reduce the salaries and the players are hopping mad with good reason. So can they reach a point where both sides come together? And David, you pointed out, Mully, you're right. You know, billionaires fighting millionaires with the highest unemployment rate since the Great Depression. That's not going to go over well. And part of baseball, like going to, you know, Cubs and Sox fans, I get it, whatever. Going to Wrigley Field is an experience. Walking up those stairs, sitting in those seats, day baseball, sunshine,
the smell of urine everywhere,
talking to people. Okay.
You know you don't care about that.
I just asked you.
Have a good night.
In his own conference call with NBA players, Commissioner Adam Silver cautioned about the challenges of COVID-19 and said there's a likelihood of finishing the season in Las Vegas or Orlando rather than traveling, if it does finish at all. Silver also said next season likely will start on Christmas either way. Do you like both of these ideas?
It's tough for me, to be honest with you, because I'm very worried about this idea. I don't like the idea of starting next Christmas. I would like that to start as early as possible. I like the idea of what the NFL has done with announcing their schedule and then obviously having a lot of things in place that if the timetable has to change, they change it. I get the idea of having like a tournament. I don't know that they need to finish the season. I don't know how many games you need to have with the NBA. And I don't know if you can have the same kind of off season that you want to have, the same time to it. So I would rather them start the season on time than delay it until Christmas. That's what gives me pause on this whole thing. Look, I think, you know, Shaq came out and said, just cancel this year, forget it, don't even bother with it. We also heard from Kevin Durant, who said that he won't be able to come back if there is a resumption of the season. Not that anybody was basing that on him. But, I would prefer more of a tournament than an extension of the season. And I would worry about next year, really, at the time it's supposed to start, not postponing it till Christmas.
You're hearing from people like Shaq, like Kevin Durant, who don't necessarily have as much at stake in finishing this season and crowning a champion as the people actually involved. I mean, when you hear from the Bucks owner and that desire to want to finish things, and you hear optimism from other people who are involved, then you understand why they want to finish this thing. And I get that. And I do think there might be a compromise to be reached. If they find out that it's safe to play in Vegas and or Orlando, maybe you just play the playoffs there. Maybe you amend your tournament and have the playoffs and have to play in a concentrated area and a condensed schedule, and you do what you need to do to crown an NBA champion for 2020. Okay, fine. Then you regroup. Then you take a deep breath and a step back. If you want to start in the NBA season now, every NBA season on Christmas Day, I think that probably not a lot of NBA beat writers and personnel are going to like, you know, forfeiting their Christmas every year because then it's a new holiday reality. But I understand why you wouldn't want to compete with the NFL. This is also, Adam Silver being pragmatic, being practical, and he's a great innovator. So I don't mind that idea as much as I probably wonder about the wisdom of having to finish the regular season this year. Just get on with it. If you want to get on with the playoffs, you might be leaving some teams out. If you want to expand the playoffs to start your tournament, do whatever you need to do if you safely can resume play, forego the final 15 to 20 games that each team might have left in the regular seasons, begin your tournament, crown your champion, move on to 2021, and start thinking Christmas Day, beginning of next season. I'm okay with changing that tradition.
If they insist on crowning some sort of a makeshift champion, because, of course, every time we look back at this year, there's always going to be an asterisk by everything. You know, all of these seasons, whether stopping in the middle of them or not even starting in the case of Major League Baseball, and if they do resume here in the NBA, I don't want to see any non-playoff teams. You know, the Bulls obviously would not be anywhere near a playoff or a tournament or any kind of system that they're going to implement here to try to crown a champion. And the Bulls have already had so much change in their front office, it would be bizarre to be like, okay, now let's throw you back out there. I mean, there are reports over the weekend I saw that Jim Boylan is very close to perhaps being on the chopping block. If that happens over the next, 2 weeks or so, and then they resume play in 3 weeks, let's say, then who's going to be the head coach? You know, it's like they've already had their off season, and they want the last season to resume again. So if they do bring something back and it is safe, David, like you said, in Vegas or Disney World or wherever they can pull it off, it only needs to be the top eight teams from each conference. If you want to do a round robin or something like that, make it a little bit more interesting and not the traditional playoff format, that's fine. But I don't want to see any non-playoff teams, and really this is just me not wanting to see the Bulls again, this iteration of the Bulls. Let's have some personnel moves, and let's get the AK train rolling a little bit next year's Bulls, and hopefully, before Christmas, because I remember 2011 when they had the lockout, and the season didn't start until December, and it felt like it took forever to get to the NBA season. So that's another concern there.
Bears.
I would just like to see the playoffs as well. Just get straight to the point. Just get to crowning a champion. But, you know, if it goes later, I mean, if there is not a resumption of NBA basketball by mid-June, I agree with the Shaq idea. Just scrap it. Because the later, I mean, I understand you're talking about starting the season later potentially, but I just maybe don't think it's worth it. With all of this, the health concerns going on, why risk it? At a certain point, why endanger any other players from getting sick and spreading this thing all over again? You already had this thing spread within the league this year. You don't need to have it happen again. So I think, you know, just to be safe, if you may as well wait till mid-June. If you can't do it before then, scrap it. And Christmas could work if things, you know, there's talk about coronavirus popping back up in the fall. And if that's the case, maybe they will have to start around Christmas time. But hopefully that doesn't happen. I would like to personally see them just keep everything on track if possible. Start the next season in the fall as they usually do and try to get things back on track.
At this point, I think it's really important for all the sports to come back in some sort of fashion just for our entertainment. I'm not talking about if it's not safe, assuming that it's safe, assuming that the testing's there. So I would propose a NCAA-style NBA tournament. Every team is back in, single elimination, in a place like Orlando, in a place like Vegas. As soon as one team is eliminated, you and your staff and whoever else, out of there. So you get rid of the amount of people sooner than later. That also would lead to a regular start for the NBA. If they try to finish the regular season and then go through a full-blown playoffs, I understand why they're talking December. And also, to David's point, you know, get out of the way of the NFL. We'll take our chances going head-to-head with Major League Baseball as they're just coming out and their season's starting and we're going into our playoffs. We'll take our chances in that ratings battle. So I think an NCAA-style NBA tournament would be a ton of fun. You get a lot of people watching. It'd be very entertaining. That's what I would suggest if they were asking me.
You know, I'm glad you asked that question.
Deshaun Watson tweeted Friday that the Bears never talked to him before the draft, a claim refuted quickly by the Rich Eisen Show account that documented Watson saying in 2017 he spoke with the Bears. Should Ryan Pace issue a statement to remove doubt once and for all, and would it matter?
Well, certainly might help. I think there's always going to be the suggestion that Ryan Pace didn't do enough to scout Deshaun Watson before the 2017 draft. I don't necessarily buy into this whole race argument and never have. I don't think that anything related to Ryan Pace's decision to stay away from drafting Deshaun Watson, the guy who I thought they should have and a lot of people thought they should have drafted that day because he fit the criteria that the Bears had expressed, a winning quarterback with experience from a good program who had changed the state of that program during his career. They didn't pick him because they were infatuated with Mitch Trubisky and all that he had proven in 13, all of them, 13 college games at North Carolina. But I don't think that it was because of race. I think that because of a fear of Watson's health, because of his maybe the knee situation was something that probably kept him away. He misread the situation. He misjudged the potential. But I think that was all of it. And that is going to be, you know, we talk about stains on legacies and careers. That's going to be one that Ryan Pace just simply does not outlive. I don't know what prompted Deshaun Watson to tweet out what he did, but it was quickly like it was curious because everyone remembers the John Fox contingent going down with Dow Loggins and scouting him at Clemson because that was not a very well-kept secret. It was turned out to be a smokescreen, but they were there. They did visit, so that was a complete bunk in terms of the idea that they never talked before the draft. It just created some drama on a Friday night when people were probably bored on Twitter and gave people something to discuss.
Well, it's kind of bizarre. I mean, it's my understanding that it was John Feinstein who wrote a thing from Doug Williams saying that, you know, about,
yeah, right.
about race, and then Doug Gottlieb rallied saying that there's no way that anybody would take that, you know, race into consideration, and then all of a sudden Deshaun Watson responding to that tweet The second one, you know, the Gottlieb tweet came out and said the Bears never contacted me once. And the Rich Eisen account, they played him saying that. Now, is it very simple? Is it here's a guy that's in the draft that it could be the first quarterback taken, and he wants everyone to know that everybody is interested in him. So he says everyone's contacted him, and he includes the Bears in that statement, when in reality, I would imagine that they never contacted him. You know, and I'm with you, David. I think it had more to do with whether or not they felt that the injuries had added up to a point where he wasn't an option for them, but they apparently did not contact him. He wouldn't say that if he knows that they did. And the fact that he said something that was different earlier, that came through the process of trying to get drafted. So that's almost like a noble lie. It's really in his own self-interest. Anyway, I whatever the case may be, I would be so disappointed if it had anything to do with race. And I think everyone would be. And they need to comment on that. They need to make that clear. But the only thing we really know is that the Bears do play Deshaun Watson this year. And don't think he doesn't have that game high on
yes.
the mantle. He's got that circled, and he's gonna go after them. I mean, he's got something to prove. He's got a chip on his shoulder about it, clearly. And I would say that that's probably going to come back and bite Ryan Pace at some point. But, yeah, listen, you know, it'd be nice if the general manager were available to more than the team program, and you could actually ask a question and a follow-up and get his form of thinking on things, but I don't think that's happening.
I mean, I can't believe we're still talking about this, and then when these two teams play again, we're going to have to relive the whole thing
exactly.
over and over again. So I'll withhold comment on this story until we actually get to the game, because I can't talk about it over and over and over again. I will say, though, that Doug Gottlieb is a pathetic little worm, so that's what I have to say about him.
Well, if we're going to give advice to Ryan Pace here, I mean, what we know is that he felt butterflies in his stomach and fell head over heels for the wrong damn quarterback, and it's an embarrassing situation as it is. Ryan Pace, just don't say anything about it. It's just been an embarrassing affair. So it doesn't matter. The history of the 2017 draft has been written. Just move on.
The last thing Ryan Pace needs to do is address this. That would be, I mean, of all the things that we give him crap about as far as not talking to the media and not making himself available, to actually go out of his way and comment on this would be absolutely asinine. Now, the Bears were there, but just because you're there looking at him and watching him and recording times doesn't mean you talk to him. So I guess it's all based by definition of what exactly talking to someone is.
I'm not sure I understand your question.
Should the Bears do whatever necessary to sign former Saints All-Pro guard Larry Warford, and did they overspend too early to get it done?
Yes to all and above. I mean, of course they should do anything they can, and of course they should always try to better their team. Maybe if they get Warford, they can then move the guy that they signed to the right tackle position and create a little more competition, maybe even improve their line a little bit. Look, I understand the thinking that they're abutting the cap and they don't have any money. And I'm not suggesting that they go back to the First National Bank of Khalil Mack and try to push that contract out more and pay him more money in the right now. But they do have guys that are making some money that they could probably go to and manipulate some of that. You know, you would think you'd take a look at that Robert Quinn contract. I don't know if that would prevent them from being able to keep him later on. That's kind of what happened with Julius Peppers. They kept going to him and giving him money and extending out the big cap hit, and they did it so often that they had to let him go. And you don't want to do that with Mac, obviously, but they've already tapped in there a couple times, so it's a possibility. You can do anything you want cap-wise. You know, there is a piper to pay at some point. But if you want to win, you get the best players you can. And here's the other thing. You don't worry about who could possibly be available, because that puts you in a terrible position. So you go out and you improve and you try everything you can. And if something like this comes up, maybe you regret spending money in a couple different places. Maybe you ought to rethink what you were doing with Jimmy Graham. But the fact of the matter is that this is a really significant improvement and a great player, and if you can get him, get him.
28-year-old Pro Bowl guard at a position that you need. You have spent your entire offseason, spring and winter, like you're shopping at a garage sale for your living room furniture. Okay, Larry Warford is a leather couch tucked in the back that you overlooked the first time, and now your van is already loaded, and you got to find a way to get it home. Make this happen, Ryan Pace. You can figure it out later. Molly, you offered a lot of different options you have under the salary cap, which is something you can manipulate to your as much as you need to help your team. And Larry Warford helps your team, so I don't think they should close the door on this yet.
No, door should remain open. Larry Warford, good player, good resume. A lot of teams will want him, though. That's the problem here. Teams with a better salary cap situation than the Bears. So I think this is a long shot. But if they can move some money around, ask nicely, do whatever they need to do, work their cap magic, maybe bring in this nice, comfortable couch, David. We'll go with that analogy.
This is a huge, huge position of need. You need to help out your O-line. The Bears should absolutely do this. And who are we kidding? Ryan Pace already has this in the bag, man. He has the New Orleans to Chicago pipeline established. Akeem Hicks, Jimmy Graham, Ted. Who are we kidding here? It's done.
It's after six, but I'm going to answer anyway. Be careful with offensive linemen, Pro Bowlers from the Saints. I think that you have to look at that and be clear. I'm ready to Olin left the Bears and went there. I'm ready for the Bears to go to battle with the five or six guys they have right now.
Wow, that's fascinating, Dustin. 312-644-6767. I never thought you'd turn down an offensive lineman. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the score.
Hey, Rob Bradford here. I have set out on a mission with my good friends at FanDuel to prove what I have known for some time. Baseball isn't boring. Now I have a daily podcast to prove it with some of the most notable people in the baseball world screaming baseball isn't boring from the mountaintops, or at least agreeing to come on our show. Players, managers, GMs, and yes, even the commissioner of baseball, Rob Manfred. It has been a constant wave of baseball's most powerful voices. So join the revolution. Subscribe and soak in Baseball Isn't Boring. Listen on your Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts. You'll be glad you did.